I did want to mention there is some attachments at the Clue-In page, including our state and tribal coordinators, some of the outreach flyers, which do mention helpful organizations to assist you in writing your grant. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce today's first speaker, which is Mike Norman. He's our Brownfields coordinator here in Region 4, Atlanta. So once more, please put your phone on mute, and we'll get started.
Good morning. This is Mike Norman. I'm the Brownfields coordinator, as Brian said, here in EPA Region 4, and welcome to this call. We're excited about the opportunity to present this to you today, and we're going to share with you a lot of information to help make your grant writing efforts successful. This morning, we're going to go through a number of items. We're going to give you some information about the some background information on the Brownfields program and the grants program as well. We're going to talk about how we review these grants, the threshold criteria for initial review of the grants, and then the ranking criteria that we go through for all three of the different types of grants, the assessment grants, the revolving loan fund grants, and cleanup grants. And we hope to wrap that up about 11:30, 11:35, and be able to answer questions for you. Right now, I'm on the slide with the introduction of the EPA speakers. Again, I'm Mike Norman. I'm the Brownfields coordinator, and we have four project officers, Brownfield project officers, that are going to be speaking today, and they include Olga Perry, Brian Holtzclaw, who you already heard from, Kathleen Curry, and Wanda Jennings. So we'll move right into background on EPA's Brownfield grant. Our mission here at EPA is to protect human health and the environment. That's what we do in all of our programs, our air, water, and Superfund programs. But we believe that... We believe that revitalization of contaminated properties goes hand in hand with that mission. There are a number of benefits to revitalization, and just listed a few here on the slide that at the top is labeled benefits of revitalization. It increases the local tax base, facilitates new job growth. You're able to utilize the existing infrastructure rather than create new infrastructure, roads, sewers, and whatnot. That takes development pressure off of undeveloped land, the green space, preventing sprawl. When you prevent sprawl, you take cars off the road, and that results in cleaner air. It also reduces habitat destruction, and there are many, many other benefits. The definition of brownfields, and this is important, it's real property, the expansion, redevelopment, or reuse of which may be complicated by the presence or potential presence of a hazardous substance, pollutant, or contaminant. Note that part, potential presence, because many properties that might be thought to be contaminated turn out through assessment efforts not to be. About 30% of the properties assessed through the Brownfields program turn out not to have contamination or contamination that warrants any kind of cleanup efforts. The Brownfields program covers, and these grants cover a variety of hazardous substances, pollutants, or contaminants. The standard hazardous substances under the Superfund law are covered. They're all listed hazardous substances, able to address petroleum contamination, such as contamination from underground storage tanks, above-ground storage tanks, or bulk fuel storage facilities. Asbestos and lead paint are eligible. Controlled substances, such as meth labs, are also eligible. Mine-scarred lands, which not only includes the mine, but the tailings and where those tailings come to be located, and a variety of other environmental contaminants can be covered as well. Now I'm on the slide that's labeled at the top, EPA's investment in Brownfields grants. Since 1995, when it began as a pilot program, we've awarded over 1,300 grants nationally, worth over $500 million. That's allowed us, through our grantees, to assess more than 7,000 parcels of property and leverage over $8.5 billion in cleanup and redevelopment funds. And it's generated nearly 40,000 new jobs. Talk a little bit about the competitive grant program here. The main thing to take away from all of this today is that this is a very competitive process. As you'll see from the next slide, the one that's labeled Brownfield's Competitive Grant Program, last year in 2000, a year ago for the 2006 cycle, we received over 650 proposals nationally, and a little bit less than 300 of them were awarded for almost $70 million. That's less than one in three who applied will actually receive a grant. Again, so it is very competitive. Here in Region 4, we were able to fund 26 grants. That's 23 assessment grants and three cleanup grants. The breakdown on that here in Region 4 is that seven of our eight states were able to receive grants of one kind or another. We awarded a total of $5.1 million out of that $70 million in grant funding. Talk a little bit about the application process. And is everybody able to keep up with me so far?
Yes.
Okay, good. The proposal guidelines were published and released to the public on October 16th of this year. We're in the middle, right in the middle of the grant cycle right now. They close on December 8th of this year, and we expect to announce those who are selected and awarded sometime in the spring of 2007. And we'll talk about the evaluation process to get to that point. We start out, once we receive the grants, with a threshold criteria review. And again, we'll go into detail on each one of these items. Those that pass the threshold review will then go to a national ranking panel. That national panel, we're doing something slightly different this year. There will be four reviewers, and one of those four reviewers will be from Region 4. That's a change from last year. After these proposals are ranked, there will be a selection by our EPA headquarters, and generally the highest ranking proposals are those that are selected. And around the end of May is when we'll announce those who have won awards. So let's talk just a little bit about the type of funding that's available. Again, we have three different types of grants available here, and I'll go through them one by one. The assessment grant program allows you to come up with inventories of sites, and once you identify sites, to characterize and assess those sites, to planning, community involvement type activities related to those sites. You can apply either community-wide or site-specifically for these grants. You can apply for $200,000 hazardous substance grants. As I mentioned earlier, that includes asbestos, lead paints, other environmental hazards. You can apply for a $200,000 petroleum only grant. You can apply for up to $350,000 per property on a site specific grant with an approved waiver. But no more than two applications. You cannot make more than two applications per entity. And you must apply separately, separate application for hazardous substances and petroleum grants, assessment grants. this is just a little success story. We've got a couple of these mixed in here. This is a dry cleaner in Jackson, Mississippi, with the typical dry cleaner problems, the perchloroethylene, solvent contamination, and through some assessment efforts and leveraged funding, we were able to help the community turn that into a police substation. The revolve, and again, on each one of these, we're going to go into a little bit more detail about this process. So, the revolving loan fund program allows you to make low interest loans. The grant recipient to make low interest loans to carry out cleanup activities on brownfield properties. Up to $1 million per applicant is available. That can be broken down into up to 40% of those of that $1 million can be given as sub grants, leaving 60% available for loans. Coalitions may apply, and there's a cost share on this of 20%. And just a little revolving loan fund success story. This is Malibu Bay. It's a redevelopment that created 264 units of affordable housing. This is in West Palm Beach, Florida. The South Florida Regional Planning Council, who was a revolving loan fund grant recipient, made a loan, an $800,000 loan, to assist in cleanup of a 14-acre site that was formerly part of a golf course. And here's the end result of all that is this apartment complex. The cleanup grant program allows you to clean up brownfield sites. The grants are up to $200,000 per property. This applies to both hazardous substances and petroleum-only contamination. And this year you can apply for up to 3 properties. That's down from 5 last year. You must submit separate proposals for each property. For cleanup grants, nonprofits may apply, and there's also a cost share of 20% on this. It's important to note that the grantee must have fee simple title to this property. In other words, you must own this property by June 30th of 2007. And here's another success story for the cleanup grant program. This was a truck stop in the Atlanta area formerly that with underground storage tanks, your typical benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, xylene contamination. Through cleanup efforts, it's been redeveloped into soccer fields for the Atlanta Youth Soccer Association. We have some other brownfields programs that we're not going to talk about today. We do have the job training grant program. That was a separate competition that closed in September, I believe. We expect to announce the recipients of the job training grants next week at the National Brownfields Conference. We also provide targeted brownfields assessments here with some limited funding that we have available. And Olga Perry is the contact for that, and you have her contact information on the slide. It's also available on our website. There's an application process for that. So getting started, you should all be at a slide now that is labeled Proposal Guidelines at the top, and it's got our website where these proposal guidelines are located. Now, we're going to give you some training and tips today on the grant writing process. We're going to give you some input and some inside knowledge about what we go through to review these grants. But again, it's very important to read through the proposal guidelines. This is not a substitute for a thorough review of that and following the guidelines to a T. So again, follow the guidelines. You can get mentoring, some tips from some prior successful grantees, and there's a web address that we give here with a listing of some of those of who all those grantees are. It includes phone numbers and in many cases contact information as well. Keep in mind that a lot of these reviewers, as I mentioned earlier, only one person from this region is going to be on the review panel, and they may not be aware of your community and your projects. So you need to write as though we know the reviewers know nothing about your community or about your project. It's a standalone document. Address all the criteria in the guidelines and minimize the use of any kind of acronyms or technical jargon. We're guilty of that. We speak in alphabet soup here at EPA, but anyway, clarify the acronyms that you do use. And then there's some specific requirements. Again, most of these are listed in the guidelines. Use white paper, obey the page limits. You're limited to 18 single-sided pages. Limit the number of attachments. Pages, more than 18 pages, proposals more than 18 pages will have the extra page removed. And then, you know, keep in mind the margins, the 12-point font, and don't use color, photos, color maps, things like that. We're gonna have to make copies of each one of these proposals and give them to people from other regions, other agencies, and so you want to make sure that what you send in copies well on black and white. If you're applying for more grant proposals, as I mentioned earlier, you have to submit separate proposals. So now I'm going to turn it over. First of all, are there any questions on? We're going to hold off. Okay, we'll hold off on the questions till the end. Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Olga Perry, who's going to talk to you about the threshold criteria.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning. On the threshold criteria, again, this is Olga Perry, and I'm going to discuss a little bit about the threshold criteria. Remembering that what you see here on these slides are simply a summary of what is in the book, and is in no ways or means a substitute for what you read in the guidelines. If you have questions, please don't hesitate to give us a call. Our names and numbers are listed in this presentation, and you may also find them on the Internet. And you can see them on slide 104. Again, threshold criteria. That's a pass-fail criteria for the proposal. You must meet all of the criteria. If you have one failure, even one failure, your proposal has failed and will be pulled from the process to go no further. this is a part of the evaluation in which if EPA has any questions, we will contact you or whoever the contact person is listed in the proposal. This is an opportunity for us to pick up the phone and see exactly what did you mean. Now, if you omitted something from your proposal, we cannot then put that information into your proposal, but we can clarify what the issue may have been. On the first slide that says threshold criteria, and it lists the assessment, revolving loan fund, and cleanup. Ryan, could you click for me? That way I know everybody will know when we go next. Okay. On the slide that says assessment, revolving loan fund, and cleanup, that gives you a summary of what the threshold criteria are, and it also shows you gives you a quick reference to what each criteria has in common, such as they each have the application eligibility, they each require a letter from the state or tribal authority. Again, this is a quick reference for you. Let's go to the next slide. This slide tells you or provides for you a little more detail in terms of what must be passed, and that is the applicant eligibility. Again, a letter from your state or tribal authority. There are some things that are listed in this slide that are for the revolving loan fund and cleanup only, such as the cleanup authority and oversight structure and the cost share. You'll find those two efforts or those two criteria in RLF and cleanup only. However, for a description of jurisdiction and legal authority to manage your revolving loan fund, that is solely in the revolving loan fund. Next, please. Threshold applicant eligibility. Again, the applicants that are eligible are your municipalities, your cities, your states, your quasi-governmental entities, such as your economic development group. For cleanup grants, nonprofit organizations are eligible to apply. But again, that is only for the cleanup grant. Nonprofit groups are eligible to apply. Coalitions may apply for revolving loan funds as well. Next, letter from the state. This is extremely important. This particular letter from the state or tribal authority acknowledges that the applicant plans to conduct or oversee assessment and or cleanup activity and to apply for a grant. That's what this letter should, that's the kind of information this letter should provide for us. Next, please. Under our useful tips, you'll see it states that your letter must be a current letter. Please do not provide us with letters that you have acquired from the state the year before or the year before that. It must be a current letter. General letters of correspondence and documents evidencing state involvement will not be accepted. Remember that as well. Contact your state or tribal agency in advance of your proposal deadline. Next, please. Okay. Under site and property ownership eligibility, the Brownfield Law prohibits EPA from providing grant funds to any kind of entity that is under, I'll say, a federal law, such as CERCLA 107, that's your NPL sites and so forth. If there's a liability for site owners, liability for site owners is highly dependent on how and when the site was acquired. Therefore, also the site eligibility is dependent on how and when the site was acquired. The site and property ownership eligibility requirements apply across all brownfield programs. Okay? Next slide. You'll see the most common acquisition sites or common acquisition scenarios are your foreclosures, your purchase, your outright purchase, eminent domain. Someone perhaps gave the city the site or donated the site. Let us know that. That needs to be in your proposal. Next slide. It says sites that are not eligible. Again, any site that has been on the NPL or National Priorities List that is not eligible. Any site that is under a unilateral order, a court order, an administrative order, a judicial order, those sites are not eligible. Property subject to jurisdiction, custody, or control of the United States government, those sites, again, are not eligible for the Brownfield grant. Okay. Next slide, which you'll see, it says site and property ownership eligibility, sites requiring a property-specific determination. It says properties subject to ongoing or planned CERCLA removal actions. Properties, facilities issued a permit by the federal or authorized state government under solid waste, Federal Water Pollution Control Act, Toxic Substance Control Act, or even the Safe Drinking Water Act. These require a property-specific determination. Our next slide gives additional information, such as your RCRA sites. RCRA sites are listed as our add-back properties, and they must come in for a site-specific determination. A site that has had PCB release and is subject to TSCA, remediation under TSCA, that is. That must come under a site-specific determination, as well as your Lust Trust Fund sites. Next slide, helpful hints, or useful hints. At a minimum, a phase one should be completed, and that phase one is subject to the ASTM standards for cleanup sites only. Again, I'm sorry, I should have mentioned that up front, under your helpful tips, that is, for your cleanup sites. A phase one is required, and a phase two should be on the way or even completed. Completed would be best because that provides you with the most information. Doesn't have to be, but it provides you with the most information for you to put in your budget, under your sustainability, and so forth. Next slide, petroleum determination. If you look in your guidebook, you'll see on page 22 for assessment and page 44, you'll see this information specifically for petroleum site determination. Applicants with petroleum sites must provide the answers to the petroleum threshold questions to the state so that the state can do a determination for you. See contact list for the name of the person in the state to call about your petroleum site. The petroleum information is only if your proposal is going to be for petroleum. Threshold, cleanup authority and oversight structure. For cleanup grants and RLF grants, describe how you will oversee the cleanup at the site. Indicate whether you plan to enroll into a state or tribal voluntary cleanup program or VCP program. For cleanup sites, provide your plan to obtain access. That is very important. You must have a well-thought-out plan as to how you intend to obtain access to any particular property, if you own it, then, you know, that's all good. And cleanup sites are supposed to be owned by June. But please describe how you are going to gain access to any neighboring properties and so any adjacent properties and so forth. If you think that it's off-site. For RLF, provide your legal opinion stating your authority to access and secure site in the event of an emergency or loan default. Some helpful hints or tips. Region 4 strongly, I do mean strongly, encourages all sites undergoing cleanup to enter into the state and tribal response program. Those of you who have obtained cleanup grants already, you know how strongly we encourage that. And it's so important because you want to make sure that whatever work you do under this program is going to be acceptable under your state program. Otherwise, I don't want to say you wasted your time, but you are going to have to spend more money if you didn't ensure that when you were working with the program. We suggest you hire technical assistants to oversee borrowers. Additionally, for RLF and cleanup, be sure to answer ability to gain access to adjacent properties, which I stressed earlier. For RLF, emergency access may rely on public safety authority or long term. Next slide. Earlier, Mike mentioned that the cleanup program and the RLF program requires a 20% cost share. If you're applying for up to $200,000 in the cleanup, that's $40,000 that you're going to need to match it with. Just to kind of give you a ballpark of what you're looking for. The cost share is calculated again at 20%. The cost share may be in the form of contribution of money. It may also be tracked in labor, material, or services from a non-federal source. If contribution is labor, again, material, or other services, it must be incurred for an eligible or allowable expense under the grant. Applicants may petition for a hardship waiver. But let me tell you, those are very, very, very difficult to come by. But you can apply for them. So make sure whatever you write, that it is extremely concise and it is extremely expressive of what your needs are. Helpful tips. Why do I keep telling them tips? Okay, helpful tips. 20% cost share again for RLF. Clearly identify the source of funds in which you're going to use if you're going to use something other than money from your program. Clearly identify that. If you're going to use a donation, clearly identify that. You may apply for a waiver. Again, those are hard to come by. But just to give you an example, if you've been through a bankruptcy and you're able to express that and how you're going to manage this program on a successful basis, we need to know that cost share requirements can only be met with eligible activities under the grant. RLF only. Cost share may be passed to borrower and sub-grantee. If this is your plan, identify a backup plan. Next slide, please. Next slide. Okay. Next slide. Legal authority to manage a revolving loan fund. Provide an opinion from your legal counsel that demonstrates your legal authority to perform the action necessary to manage a revolving loan fund. Provide an attachment. This information can be provided as an attachment from your legal counsel. Legal authority must include the ability to hold funds, make loans, enter into legal binding loan agreements, and collect repayments. Your counsel must provide that for you in an opinion that you can attach. It is not going to count against your 18 pages. But you must attach it. You must reference it in the proposal. And you must show us specifically the information that we are requesting. Please do not attach an arbitrary document and just expect the reviewer to look at it. Tell us specifically what you want us to see, specifically what you want us to get out of that document. That is if you want a good score. Useful tip. Next slide. This criteria only applies to RLF, that is the legal authority. And again, counsel legal opinion must be attached to the application. This authority may be based on statute, regulation, or other authority. Again, the summary that you've just heard in no means and in no way is a substitute for the guidelines. So please be sure to read the guidelines carefully and thoroughly. Again, this is Olga Pear, and now I'm turning it over to the ranking section.
Hi, this is Brian Holtzclaw, your moderator, and I noticed a few beeps, people getting on. We are now at slide 47. Kathleen will be talking about the ranking criteria, which is the second key portion of your proposal. I did also want to interject that there is a question icon if you'd like to send us questions during this broadcast before our formal end. You can do that. And also those that just may have gotten on, we are going to archive both the audio and the PowerPoint at the Clouin website. So if you did miss, let's say, the first half an hour, you can always go to the archive and actually hear this presentation. So without further ado, I'll pass it on to Kathleen Curry.
Good morning. Is there anyone that cannot hear me? Again, I'm Kathleen Curry. Thank you for participating in this workshop. And we will first be going to slide 49. This is an overview of the assessment. What can, that's slide 49?
49.
Okay, I'm sorry, we have a little snafu here with the slide count. On slide 49 is basically an overview of the assessment program. What are eligible requests for funding for brownfields and assessment is to create an inventory, you can characterize, do assessment, and conduct the planning and community involvement related to brownfields work. There are two proposals per applicant. You have two selections of how you can present those proposals for assessments, either community-wide or site-specific, being you have one single site in mind. The maximum amount for the proposals are $200,000 per proposal, except for site-specific, where you can get a $350,000 per property with an approved waiver. There are no guarantees for this waiver, and they are determined on a case-by-case basis, and there are strict guidelines. So please be thorough and answer all of the criteria when considering applying for a waiver. The hazardous substance proposal, which includes asbestos, lead paint, and other environmental hazards, and also the petroleum one, which deals with oil byproducts as well, petroleum byproducts. These also must be presented separately in a proposal, even though they may still be community-wide. So you can do submit two proposals, community-wide, one for hazardous substances and one for petroleum-only contamination. Again, remember, there's a limit of only two applications per applicant, two proposals per applicant. The typical application is, of course, community-wide. And that gives you a broader application for the Brownfields Assessment Grant. If you do know that you have only one site you're interested in, then you can do just the site-specific. Going to slide 50, the ranking criteria are listed. The numbers behind each criterion represents the maximum amount of points that you can get for this criterion. In the budget, remember that you must include, participants applying for cleanup and RLS grants, please pay close attention to all criterion covered here as well. The budget, the first of 10 points, is very important that you make sure that you differentiate between EPA funding and non-EPA funding for activities. Community needs, the site selection process, the sustainable reuse of brownfields, creation and or preservation of green space, pre-award community notification, and so on. I'm going to give a couple of hints for these as we go. You have some useful tips, and they state that you're to include a short introduction prior before presenting the table. Remember to follow the format presented. Yes? Yes? Please mute your phone. I can hear the conversation. Thank you. Pardon?
Double check your location.
Oh, we're on slide 51.
Make sure. The slide number.
It's 50.
54.
Oh, wow. Okay.
48, 49. Something's wrong then. So that's clean this right out.
Okay. I'm looking at ranking. A, budget, 10 points, and a sample format for the budget description. For me, that's slide 51. It may be slide 50 for others. Look down at the bottom of the table, and you'll note that they state that equipment is considered anything costing $5,000 or above. So when you're presenting your budget table, you do not enter anything on the equipment line. All costs will be considered supplies. Under this particular grant, we do not allow equipment costs, only supplies. Also remember to include funds for travel to the National Brownfield site, Brownfield conferences, and regional meetings. And also remember, please, that you must comply with the procurement procedures contained in 40 CFR Section 31.36 or for nonprofits Section 40 CFR 30.40. Slide Ranking A Budget Useful Tip, page 52. The tips are there. Include a short introduction prior to the budget table. After you present the budget chart, explain each of your tasks clearly and completely. Please remember that these tasks should mirror the tasks as presented in your project work plan. Utilize clear and precise task descriptions. Again, don't spell out acronyms. Or rather, don't use acronyms, spell out the words. Again, as you know, there is a prohibition against administrative costs, so do not use the word administrative to describe a task. Use programmatic costs, program development, or something similar. Slide 53, again, useful tips for budget. Again, in the narrative, when you're discussing what the cost will be used for, you were to justify that cost. Basically, that means to relate it to the work plan, tasks, and activities. And you can utilize up to 10% of the grant for health monitoring, enforcement, and monitoring of institutional controls, and other related program development and implementation action. Slide 54B, community needs. Under community needs, please remember to include your demographics, the health and environmental risks, any special population interests, and environmental concerns. Always cite the source of where you're gleaning this information, your statistical information, and other information. Slide 55. Useful tips. When speaking of the environmental, social, and economic conditions in your community, provide the information on the challenges. Again, demographics, and when they speak of demographics, that means population broken down into ethnicity as well as numbers. And it doesn't, it will help if you, when you present your demographics, if you present them with a comparison, and particularly the economic information. That's where meaningful statistics come into play. Discuss the impact of industrial closing, business closing, numbers of jobs lost, bodies closing, property tax impacts, etc. Page 56, slide 56, community needs continue. Explain the benefits that will be derived from this grant as both health and economic. Slide 57, community needs, useful tips. Be clear who is the targeted community. If it's a neighborhood within a community, state that. And why? Justify. And describe that neighborhood. Give the contrast between a particular neighborhood and the community within where it resides. With that, that means discussing the environmental, social, and economic benefits that the community will derive from this brownfields project. And be specific. Slide 58, be careful about the disconnect. Many times when we read these proposals and the community is discussed, the applicant tends to neglect to show the relationship, the established relationship, between the community that they're discussing and the applicant. You must document how you know what you know about the community and the area that you're wanting to put your project in. Make sure the information is detailed. 59. Characterize the impact of the brownfield. That means that you will include how many brownfield sites are located in the targeted area, the size of each one, and the location, and the economic, health, and environmental impact, the challenges that these brownfield sites present for your targeted community. Slide 60, community need useful tips. Again, this is a reiteration that when you're addressing the impact of brownfields, that you include the size, the number, and location of the site. Do not write a proposal and not include this information. It will cost you. Find out the information by calling your state brownfields coordinator and getting a list of their field sites for your town area, going to the city council, wherever is a source for finding out this information. And viral facts also may be a resource. The website, which is listed at epa.gov. And as I reiterate again, avoid a response that shows that you don't know. Describe the negative impact that will be caused by a potentially contaminated property that you have in your neighborhood. And if it is community-wide that you're proposing, give at least one example of the negative impact to show that you do know the community where you're targeting your project. Slide 61, slide to the selection process. This is where you have you will show how you will go about prioritizing and selecting the sites within the community-wide proposal to assess towards cleanup. You will describe how the sites were selected or will be selected, what the site selection criteria will be or is, and describe the site eligibility. Describe the path or plan inventory activities. And here I must tell you that being one that has read in the past the proposals, I think more weight, and this is just a personal opinion, but I think more weight is given to those communities that come in with an inventory already in place, because that shows that the applicant has a commitment to this brownfields project. So remember that. Again, prioritize your efforts and other activities and list them. If you're conducting assessments or planning to conduct assessments on privately owned sites, you must discuss possible access issues and how you will resolve them, and include in your attachment a letter or statement with an agreement for access to this property by the owner. Slide 62. Site selection process useful tips. Remember, we're looking for community involvement. We want to see where you have had meetings and have given the opportunity to the community to have input into the site selection process. You are to identify the specific site selection criteria that will be utilized. Remember the very last one. Most proposal writers do not respond to access issues, and therefore you lose the point. So make sure you respond. Don't overlook this on privately owned property. 63, sustainable reuse of brownfields. What we're looking at is how you will go about redevelopment and reuse to prevent future pollution and to reduce resource consumption. That includes smart growth, mixed use, and how you will promote economic benefits. Slide 64. Sustainable reuse of brownfields continues. In this, for the green space, we're looking at how the green space will contribute to a vibrant and equitable and healthy community. Slide 65, useful tips. Remember to include how this funding will support your end goals, not just for this project, but your end goals for redevelopment and reuse, and how you would develop policies and statutes and regulations and programs that will achieve these goals, as well as ensure non-pollution in the future. The criteria has been modified from previous years. Make sure you read the proposal guidelines carefully. Make a connection between your master plan, strategic plan, your development plans, zoning, and other planning tools that may be in place to each of the three focus areas. Respond to each of the focus areas. You lose points when you neglect to respond to all of the focus areas and the criteria. And also, just another helpful hint before closing out this one section is, remember, on each page either put a footer or a header with the name of the applicant and the proposal year, because as Mike mentioned previously, we do make copies We're human. Papers can get confused. So make sure you have each page entitled and numbered. Thank you. Now I pass it on to Brian Hoxlaw.
Hello, everyone. I'm going to pick up where Kathleen left off. And to underscore, the cleanup and RLF folks don't need to zone out on us and go to sleep, because the things that we're covering do apply to you, even though we've entitled this assessment ranking. So we're not going to repeat ourselves, so please pay special attention. Also, before I get started on E, which is slide 66, I'd like to mention, as a friendly reminder, please go ahead and glance back at the number of points each section, and definitely prioritize the amount of space that you have accordingly to the amount of strength you're going to be scored on. Like on green space, please don't spend a whole page or two pages on green space. It's only worth, like, you know, 5 points. So I'll get started now. We are on 66. I'm going to take it just to the end and pass it off. On E, creation and preservation of green space, it says right there, describe the extent to which the grant will facilitate the creation of or preservation of or addition to a park, greenway, etc. You can read that. I am going to, for the sake of time, I'm going to focus on our tips. The guidelines, as we posted the website, I'd like to take special time on what we're requiring. So 67, the tips are, please do emphasize the long-term care and preservation. Do not overlook that. In community-wide applications, if you're selecting, prioritizing site selection, don't overlook the fact that the potential of green space might be a selection criteria. And by default, if you're developing green fields, you're definitely going to have an indirect or direct role in preserving green space, so don't presume that the reviewer knows that, so be explicit and just say that. And again, just send out a small piece of grass to mow with your lawnmower won't get you points. The next slide, more useful tips. If you've got planning documents, if you've got a vision document, master plan for your community that talks about green space, it does help to make a reference to it. And also, pull in a mention to your parks department if there is a connection there with your brownfields that you are assessing. Or in this case, we are making a link to cleanup, so talk about that. The next slide, ranking F, pre-award notification. This is a new section. It's definitely self-explanatory there. I'm not going to recite what's on every slide. So I'm going to go to the next slide. This is the community notification. Now this year you don't have to necessarily notify everyone in the community in advance, but you should be prepared to implement your plan. So we definitely like to know what your plan is. If you've already notified them, if you're already involved in a charrette or collaborative process, we do want to hear that. But if you haven't, please tell us of your explicit plans. Keep in mind that notification is not just to fellow government officials, this regional planning agency or that department of your city. You really got to make sure that ordinary citizens, such as grassroots groups, citizen groups, or civic groups, are in the picture. If you've already had the notification, please do as an attachment, which we want you to be limited with those, attach evidence of that, and that goes without saying. G is ongoing community involvement. This is more like during the term of your grant, which the cleanup and assessment is 3 years, what is your community involvement going to look like? Our brownfields grants really got grounded and founded on a lot of citizen support for our program, and that's how we launched our program. So we definitely want to see a theme of you continuously involving the community. I'm going to skip through the detailed requirements as how we outline them on slide 71 and 72. I'm going to talk about tips, what we're looking for beyond the what we put in writing. Don't underestimate the fact that we request a list of explicit community-based organizations. Please take the time to type in the person's name, the organization, and the phone number. That is one of the few things that we do make a reference check of. So if you've got somebody involved in your project, do list them. If you don't have someone involved, don't list their name, because we do have a contractor in headquarters that calls them. Please do, like I said before, include faith-based, environmental groups, a diversity of organizations. That definitely gets you points. And make sure, if you have the time, to have them input ahead of time. The next slide would be the second useful tip, 74. Have specific plans for communicating progress. But remember, communication is definitely two-way. We want you to not just notify, but also engage your community. Make sure that gets across in your description. We want the community involved in the decision-making process. 75, there's explicit things that we're looking for in reduction of threats. This is absolutely the highest scored section of all three grants. We want you to spend definitely some time working on that. As said earlier, if you go to the website and take a look at some successful grantees, we encourage you to call them, get a hold of their proposal that was award-winning, and take a look at what they wrote. Make sure you customize your response to this question. There's two parts, one and two. I'm not going to read them out. We're limited for time, but I want to focus on the tips that we're providing on page 77. Reduction of threats to human health and the environment tips. Now, for the community-wide proposals, do make a connection as best you can to health risks associated with those potential sites and those sites. If you've got specific contaminants, maybe not identified on all the community-wide sites or not even identified on site-specific, do mention a few and put at least a case example. Maybe you've got one textile mill out of five sites you're going to look at. Please speak to those contaminants and how they are a concern, and also how they potentially may be a health risk. We want you to make the connection between your cleanup or your assessment of those threats and the alleviation of those. If your community needs section, which is another high-scoring section, screams of people's concerns about health problems, you need to reiterate the same message there in this section. Next slide would be 78, continued. Be careful about the disconnect. Don't talk about overall risk that are in no way related to the your brownfield sites. And the only other thing I'd add is please include your state and local health agency, the fact that you pull them in at some point of your grant. That's very important to mention. And if you have decided to use 10% of your monies for a health monitoring component and you put that in your budget, please do not forget to mention it here. You don't want any inconsistencies. Moving on to leveraging additional resources, it's pretty much explicit. We want you to identify the funds that you're committed or will commit, and then describe your ability magic funds. Useful tips on 80. Do include staff time or other in-kind services. Don't presume that we, you know, can read your mind and what that's going to look like. We want you to mention things that you are pursuing, you're going after, maybe in the next 2 years. Go ahead and talk to some successful grantees. I've got one grantee that's leveraged about $145 million from about 60 different sources. Go to, you know, talk to those kind of entities so you can have at least some say in here where you're going to leverage additional resources, especially if you've got a cleanup grant and the money we're providing isn't enough. Look at, you know, regional planning agencies and other even non-governmental entities where you might get money. Programmatic capability is the next slide. We want you to brag on how you think you can manage this grant successfully and also your history as far as useful tips. Definitely mention key staff by name, maybe cumulative years experience in managing grants. Make some mention of your procurement process. Also don't overlook if you had an adverse audit finding, say so. If you haven't, say so also. And if you've got a great track record of getting federal grants, please do mention those federal agencies by names, the cumulative amounts, maybe over some time span, so you can show to us you have been accountable and responsible and successful at getting grants. The second part of programmatic capability is telling us how you've done with a previous EPA grant. Our useful tips with that respect is on slide 84. Definitely speak to that. Like was indicated, there are going to be regions that are not evaluating grants, are not from the Southeast, and we need you to talk that up. So I'm going to pass it on to Wanda. Wanda's going to talk specifically about ranking key points about cleanup and ILF grants.
Thank you, Brian. Hi, again, my name is Wanda Jennings, and I'm the lead person here in Region 4 for the Revolving Law Fund grant. The main purpose of my session is basically is to cover both the cleanup and the Revolving Law Fund ranking elements. Next slide. To briefly recap the cleanup grants, cleanup grants provide funding for cleanup activities. As you can see, these grant funds are funded up to $200,000 per property site. And due to our budget limitations, an entity cannot apply for no more than 3 sites. Nonprofits can apply, and as you can see here, there's also a 20% cost share requirement. Also, in order to receive a cleanup grant, the applicant must have sole ownership of the property by June 30, 2007. Revolving Law Fund grant recap. I'm on slide 87. Okay, these grants provide funding for loans and sub-grants to carry out cleanup activities. As you can see from this slide here, they are awarded up to $1 million. 40% of our funds can be used for cleanup sub-grants. 60% of this money can be given more or less to capitalize a loan, and coalitions entities can apply. And for those of you who are not familiar with revolving law fund grant type grants, coalitions are basically are two or more grant entities joined together under one grant application in which one of the participating entities actually oversees the grant agreement. And just like our cleanup grant, revolving loan fund grants provide, you must provide a 20% match share. If you look here on page, I'm on slide 87, and I think we've gotten a little bit off track, so let me slow down just a little. As you can see from the graphical representation on slide 87, the revolving loan fund grants are essentially a three-tier process. These funds flow from the EPA onto the grant recipient and then onto your loan and your sub-grant recipient. Okay, this next slide is slide number 88. Okay, this slide shows all of the ranking elements included in the revolving loan fund and your cleanup grant proposal. I'm only going to cover the elements that are different from the assessment grant proposal type. Okay, and with that, I'm going to cover the budget, reduction of threats, leveraging, programmatic capability, and the business plan for the revolving loan fund proposal, in which I'll talk about this element last. Everybody, heads up, listen up. The ranking elements for the revolving loan fund proposal starts on page 35 of the guidelines. Okay? And for the cleanup grant, this is page 50. There are 10 ranking elements for the revolving loan fund. They are A through J. And for the cleanup proposal, there are 9 elements. These elements are A through I. Next slide. Okay, this is slide number 89. This slide here basically just shows the comparison of the two proposal grant types by numerical values. As you can see, the highest total possible point for the revolving loan fund grant is 150 points. For the cleanup type proposal, it's 127 points. Again, I'm only going to cover both elements A, which is the budget, elements G, H, and I, which is the same for revolving loan fund grants as H, I, and J, as you can see from the slide. And of course, I'm going to talk lastly, like I said, about element C, which is the business plan, which is only unique to the revolving loan fund grant type program. Slide 90, ranking element A, the budget, cleanup grant. Okay, this element, guess what? It's worth 10 points. All three grant types, this is worth 10 critical points. Your typical cleanup task might include your community involvement, your site cleanup, and as well as your cleanup planning. Please note, make a notation of this. For cleanup grant, your budget must reflect your 20% cost share requirement. Okay, slide number 91. Okay, here's a sample budget format for the revolving loan fund grant proposal. Just like your cleanup and your assessment, this budget is also worth 10 points. Your typical revolving loan fund task might include your community involvement, establishing your revolving fund, marketing your revolving fund, operating your revolving fund, your cleanup planning, and as well as overseeing your site cleanup. Again, note, just like the cleanup grant proposal, the revolving loan fund budget must reflect your 20% cost share requirement. And also, please make a notation, too, if you are applying for both hazardous substances and petroleum revolving loan fund funding, you must submit 4 budget tables. Let me repeat that. 4 budget tables must be submitted. Slide number 92, use of tips. I won't discuss this because this was covered under the assessment. Those use of tips presented here are basically the same for both type grants, assessment and cleanup. So let me move on to slide number 93. For the revolving loan fund grant proposals, the applicants, again, like I just said earlier, must submit 2 separate budgets showing your loan pool task and as well as your sub-grant pool task. Don't put all your programmatic costs under your loan budget. Show programmatic expenditures also under the sub-grant budget as well. And I cannot emphasize this more. Please, by all means, double-check your math. Make sure all your rows and your columns add up to the amount that is being requested, plus your match share, because you're dealing basically with most of their budget tables. Slide 94, ranking elements B through F. This pertains to cleanup proposals. Elements C through G, that pertains to the revolving loan fund proposals. Again, please refer back to the assessment rankings. These elements here listed are unique to all three grant proposals, and like I said, they have already been discussed. Now this brings us to ranking G, the reduction of threat. This is ranking element G for cleanup proposal and H for revolving loan fund proposal. As you can see, this element is worth 27 points for cleanup and 26 points for revolving loan fund. Step element 3 is unique to cleanup grants only. Here in step element 3, we want you pretty much to describe your proposed cleanup plan and as well as the estimated cost to complete your cleanup. What are your known contaminants of concern? What is the known perceived risk? And as well as the cost associated with what is known. That's what we're pretty much looking for under this step element 3. Leveraging of additional resources is ranking element H for cleanup and I for revolving loan fund. Both of these are worth 10 points. There are two sub-elements under this criteria. Element 1 is unique to the revolving loan fund proposal. It takes a commitment at every level to make a revolving loan fund program work. If you are a coalition here, we want you to describe the resources the coalition members are contributing. Programmatic capability. This element is worth 20 points for both proposal types. This is ranking element I for cleanup, and for revolving loan fund, it is ranking element J. With respect to the cleanup proposal, both elements 1 through 4 are the same as for assessment. With the revolving loan fund proposal, this element is called programmatic capability / management structure. The second sentence in sub-element 1 is unique to the revolving loan fund proposal only. Okay, here, if you plan to hire a fund manager or an environmental expert, please describe this relationship and the type of agreement planned. Ranking element C, business plan. This is the last element I'll talk about, and it pertains only to the revolving loan fund proposal. This element here is what can actually make a break a great revolving loan fund program. In other words, this element is basically worth 24 points. And like I said, it could even make a break you into whether or not you can really can be awarded a revolving loan fund grant. As you can see, like I said, it's worth 24 points. Here in sub-elements 1 and 2, we are looking for you to tell us about your loan, to tell us about your loan and your sub-grant products for your plan to offer your loan program. Tell us about your market. Who are you going to market this program to? Are you going to market your program to small businesses, developers? What type of sites are you talking about? Are you talking about abandoned gas stations? Are you talking about industrial property sites? Are you talking about commercial property sites? Next slide. The sub-element 3, under ranking C, describe your plan for sub-grant. If you plan a sub-grant, will your sub-grants be tied to loans? The sub-element 4, tell us your management and your operational team that will actually oversee and implement this revolving loan fund grant. At least, and let me repeat that, at least 50% of a single person's staff time is required to run a revolving loan fund grant. And that brings us to my last slide, which is useful tips. Basically, what I want to say here is pretty much just know what you're getting into first before applying for any of our grant types. And talk to successful grantees in the region and as well as outside of our region. I have come to find out that's the key to any program is marketing it. And let me say lastly, please put some thought into your responses. Don't just regurgitate what's in the guidelines. Really think about what you are writing. This concludes my part. The next slide I have already discussed. And so now at this time I'm going to pass it on or pass it back to Brian.
Hi everybody, how are you doing? Thank you for your participation for coming up on the 11:30 hour. You'd like to begin to get started with a Q&A. Some of you have afforded us the opportunity to take a look at some questions in advance. What we'd like to do is address those first. So there's an ending slide there, key steps. Please look at that slide. I'm not going to go through it. We do have a resource slide. The regional information website is there, also the headquarters information website. The Clewin website, as we indicated, will have the keep the PowerPoint, also have an audio archive presentation. There is going to be a Brownfields conference next week. It may be late for some of those who heard about this for the first time. But there is a website we've listed, as well as model responses. This is from a ranking criteria about 2 years ago. So keep in mind, if you look at those model responses that are posted at one of our, Region 3's website, that they are old, but you may glean some information for them. The next slide shows our names and phone numbers. We'd be happy to get any calls from any one of you having follow-up questions to this. And we would implore you to provide us any kind of feedback. There is a feedback connection to the Clewin page. The questions, we're going to get started. Mike, have you got the first one lined up?
Yeah, the first question is...
Time out. We're gonna discuss the ones online, and then we're gonna open it up to those on the phone. We'll just talk about them verbally, two-way.
Now, the first question says, can applications be submitted for a Brownfields assessment even if you are unsure if any contaminants exist on the site? Must you have prior evidence of contamination on the site? Well, as I mentioned before, that about 30% of the sites, it's based on the perception that there may be a problem there, and that's really what assessment is all about, is identifying if there is contamination there. So you don't really have to be sure, but you should have some reason to believe that there may be some contamination there on the site. The next question is, please tell me more about the applicant holding title to the site. Can it be an option to buy or a letter of intent to purchase? Can the title be held by someone else and the applicant be an authorized agent of the owner? Does anybody want to answer?
I'll answer it. You must own, if you're using our funds at June 30th,
cleanup grant.
Right. For cleanup grants, you must own the property, be in simple title. Not be acting as an agent for anyone. You must be the owner. That's for cleanup only. For assessment, if you're a municipality or quasi-governmental entity or whomever, you do not have to own the property. However, you do have to describe how you're going to gain access to that particular piece of property. That also goes for RLS.
Okay, next question. Can you give an example of the letter that would be issued by the State Environmental Authority? Is this from our Brownfields group in North Carolina or our other agency, Superfund, Dust Section, and Active Hazardous Sites?
I can answer that one. First, at the Clewin site, is a list of all the state brownfields coordinators in each state. You can go to that, give them a call. They will forward it to the appropriate department. For instance, if it is a petroleum grant, they will have one of their petroleum persons write the letter. It's a very simple letter, but it has to come on state letterhead and accompany your grant.
Okay. Next question is, if a parcel is owned by a private owner, can the county apply for an assessment grant on his behalf? County purchased this parcel in order to apply for an assessment grant.
Okay. You do not, as Olga said previously, for assessments, you do not have to own the site. Kind of confusing is that can the county apply for an assessment on his behalf? We don't give money or award ownership, private ownership that are possible PRPs. You can, as the county, a municipality. Pardon me?
What's a PRP?
Oh, PRP, I'm sorry. A potentially responsible person that's responsible for the contamination. But as a municipal or governmental entity, the county can apply for an assessment grant and apply the funds for the assessment of this property as long as they have written proof of access, permission to access the property.
Okay. Next question, for petroleum assessment grant, I am using state site eligibility criteria rather than the site eligibility criteria provided in the guidelines. Do I have to provide that criteria? Note, I will not be including sites that are prohibited from funding.
In this instance, you will have to use the site selection criteria
from the guidelines.
From the guidelines.
Mm-hmm. Pardon me?
Let us look into that real quick, and we'll get back to you before we end the call on that one. And we will post the questions and answers after that. So moving on to the next question, same questioner, for petroleum assessment sites, I have identified approximately 15 specific sites in a community. The tanks were owned by a dissolved company. Should this assessment be addressed as a community-wide grant or a site-specific grant? It should be a community-wide grant.
In that particular case.
The next question is what is a subgrantee? And Wanda, you want to answer that?
Yes, this pertains to the revolving loan fund program, and as I said early on, up to 40% of the revolving loan fund funds can be used to award cleanup sub-grants. And this is actually geared towards $200,000 per eligible site. And just like the cleanup grants, you must own the property site to come in and qualify for a cleanup sub-grant.
Okay. For the revolving loan fund, the application is for a coalition. Does a legal opinion need to be submitted from each member of the coalition or only from the applicant?
I hadn't really specifically read the guidelines, but it is my belief that it is for each entity that is coming in under the revolving loan fund grant. And if I'm wrong, I will make clarifications when we post the comments on the website.
Okay. Will projects that tie into environmental justice be given a higher rating?
Well, I think that really depends on how you write it up. Environmental justice is incorporated in the rankings in terms of how you do your demographics, how you respond to the question.
if you have a well thought out proposal, that will come across in your description and it'll be scored accordingly. It's not a separate subject per se to that would make your proposal score higher. It just depends on how well written your proposal is and how you describe that information in that proposal.
That information being the impact to the community, both environmental and health and economically.
Okay, next question. Under the budget, 10% could be used for monitoring and enforcement of any institutional controls. Please elaborate on what this phrase means and give an example of what would be suitable for a community assessment grant. That's on the cleanup grant.
If that's for all three, it's all three.
But he's mentioning his assessment in Kentucky.
I didn't get the question.
Okay.
Well, he wants to know what I asked. It's basically the definition for institutional control and what and how it can be used for 10% of that to monitor.
Okay, let's look into that one a little bit more and come back to it. And we will print all the responses to all these questions at the Clouin site. Is there a preference given by EPA on community-wide versus site-specific applications in the evaluation process?
No.
It's not a preference per se, but if you're only applying for a grant for one site, it's best that you come in for a site specific. That's what the guidelines tell you.
But you can't substitute another.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you have problems, for example, gaining access to that one site, if you were to have come in with a site-specific application and you don't get access after you awarded the grant, you can't switch the site.
If you come in for
site-specific. It does limit your flexibility down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Next question, do you have any practical tips on how private developers interested in participating in state brownfields programs can apply for EPA site-specific cleanup or RLF grants?
I know in regards to revolving loan fund grants, as I said early on, please speak to entities that actually are awarded the revolving loan fund grants. And what you can do in return, you can go knocking on these grantees' doors in order to get a loan. So as a private developer, you can get a loan. And in order to get a cleanup sub-grant, you have to own the property site.
And yeah, and you have to be a non-profit at best or a government entity for the cleanup.
Right.
And there's nothing that precludes you from forming a partnership with a municipality if that's like a gateway property to the small rural town to partner and work with them to get a cleanup grant. But in the end, the city or municipality has to own the property at the time of the cleanup grant. That is a qualification.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next, it appears the community notification and input process has been shifted to after the grant has been awarded. Am I penalized during the scoring process if I do not have community input prior to submitting the application?
Mm-hmm.
No. No, but you should have plans to...
Yeah, you're not penalized, but you should have plans for what kind of activities you're going to have with your community. Not that you have to describe them, you just need to have them. And describe them in the ranking, not the threshold.
Okay, next question. We are involved in a Greenway project. There are a number of brownfields along the way tied together, jumps around. There are a number of brownfields along the way together with a number of community groups. Can an umbrella organization apply for the grant?
or does each group who owns the property need to apply for funds? Maybe if the umbrella organization, such as a Greenway group, if they provide an agreement of cooperative action, could the umbrella be the applicant for specific sites?
Yes.
Yes, we presume that referring to assessment grants.
You may perhaps be referring to, as I said early on, you can come in as a coalition entity, whereas one member oversees the grant agreement, and you have several other entities as partnerships to the coalition.
And, of course, Lon is speaking to her expertise as RLF grants.
Regarding the 20% cost share, can that be made up of in-kind services or supplies, or does the 20% need to be real dollars?
If you turn to slide number 43, it states that if your contribution is labor, material, or other services, it must be included. Must be incurred for an eligible for eligibility, and it and you also, if you're going to use the 20% for something other than real dollars, then you must make sure it is an allowable cost under the grant. So your answer to that is yes. You can use other things. You can use in-kind services if you would like, but it must be something that is eligible, such as it cannot be administrative cost. That's not an eligible activity under our grant. It must be something that's eligible.
One of my cleanup grants, this is the only federal grant you can use as a cost share, is a CDBG. If you've already had a CDBG federal grant from HUD, you can use that. That is acceptable.
Okay. The next question is slide 53, monitoring and enforcement of institutional controls is an allowable expense. How does monitoring over time relate to the grant budget period, date by which funds must be expended? That's part one. How does monitoring over time relate to the grant budget?
Well, our grant period is 3 years, and you have to use the monies within those 3 years, so it would have to pertain to that period only.
Part two is Wanda Jennings, please expound on requirement for four budget tables if some sites include petroleum.
Yeah, again, if you're applying for both hazardous substances and petroleum for revolving loan fund funding, you must submit four budget breakdowns. And the way that this is broken down, you have hazardous loans, you have hazardous subgrants, you have petroleum loans, and then you have petroleum subgrants. So that's where the four budget breakdowns will come in.
Okay, and then the third part is our project site includes three city blocks, and we propose to submit one proposal for each block. However, we may not purchase every parcel within each block. In the event full awards are made for each proposal, what happens if every parcel within each block is not purchased? Yeah, I'm assuming this question is for a cleanup grant, since it deals with the purchase of the property, and you're not going to be able to spend funds on property that you don't own.
Exactly.
So it would be limited to those only to those properties that you do own that you'd be able to expend funds.
And can show ownership for cleanup grants,
yeah.
Right? You have to be able to show that. In fact, when you do your application, if you have been awarded a grant, you're going to have to include in your application a copy of each fee and simple title that you're applying for a grant for.
And even if you don't own it by the time of proposal, we will be looking, if you get awarded, which will be in about May, we will be needing it by the end of June 2007. So don't let that prevent you from applying for a cleanup grant if you don't own it right at the moment, but definitely have plans in mind for buying the property.
And write that in your proposal. If it's not written in there how you intend to purchase that property or what that you have some type of agreement, then it will be assumed that you don't own it and you may not own it because there may be problems in the process.
And every year we do have some people who get selected, but we have to withdraw the grant from them because they don't own the property by the deadline. The next question is, for community-wide assessment grants, threshold criteria, it appears only A, applicant eligibility, and B, state letter from state environmental authority needs to be completed. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Phase one assessment ID 19 possible problems on our one site. For budgeting a for phase two assessment, how is a budget determined? Yeah, you would just estimate your sampling and analysis cost based on some type of sampling plan for that assessment. You may have to prioritize these 19 possible problems. If you're trying to do it within the $200,000 budget, but generally, what the bulk of the costs are going to consist of. Slide number 92 states you may use up to 10% of the grant for this use. Can you explain what this slide references? 92.
Useful. You can use it.
Up to 10% of the grant for this use. Is the person that asked that question, Jessica Chestnut?
Here it is. You may utilize up to 10% of the grant after the budget chart explained tasks in detail. They want to know what this is referring to right here.
Okay, there's a number more questions. We'll move on and we'll get that one probably in writing. May RLF coalitions be comprised of governmental and non-governmental, non-profit, not-for-profit, and for-profit entities? And does it make any difference which entity manages the RLF?
It doesn't make a difference as to which entity actually manages the revolving loan fund grant, but in order to be eligible for a revolving loan fund grant, you must either be a state, a city, a town, a county, or other municipalities, or other quasi-governmental entities.
Here's the next one. I think this is a clarification. I asked a question about 10% of the budget being used for institutional controls. I wasn't sure what was meant by institutional controls, i.e., is this referring to state regulatory agencies, to local planning, or something completely different? Generally, an institutional control is some kind of land use restriction for a situation where you leave contamination in place. For example, if you have groundwater contamination that you don't address or you address through monitored natural attenuation, you would need some kind of institutional control that prevented someone from installing a drinking water well on the property. If you use an engineering control such as a cap to cover contamination, it might be a parking lot, it might be the building foundation, then you would need some kind of institutional control in place, noting that contamination is there and that if you remove that engineering control, that parking lot, for example, that you may need to address that contamination. Those are a couple of examples. Describe the possible members of a coalition group.
That could be like several cities together, several counties, several towns. The state can oversee it, and they can be the person that's going to actually oversee the revolving law fund grant.
Could you specify what constitutes a community? We have looked at countywide as a large community, and we are thinking you may be expecting a smaller community. If so, can we have multiple smaller communities combined as one community for a community-wide grant? The answer is yes on that. You basically define the community in your application. Specifically, what types of community involvement is required prior to the grant application submittal?
As of this year, there's no absolute requirement on community involvement prior to the grant being submitted. We have in years past encouraged that, always a collaborative spirit as far as having people in your community get input on your grant proposal. But as of this year, we don't, but we definitely want specific plans as far as when and if you get awarded, how you're going to immediately engage the community in some meaningful community involvement, such as forming a Brownfields steering committee, so forth, and having their exchange of information and active involvement.
Exactly. We want to know just what you intend to do with that community. Because the purpose for Brownfield is to stop all of that, here's government and we will tell you what to do with your property. And the people in the community stating that they had no input into what's happening in their community. Well, you'll see in all of our Brownfield processes, we ask that you include the community, or at least that we ask that you present some type of plan on how you are going to include the community, the neighborhood, or whatever the case may be.
Okay. The last question up here right now is, grant term is 3 years. Does this apply to RLF projects, i.e. do RLF loans have to be placed within 3 years?
The performance period for revolving loan fund grants is actually is up to 5 years, and it's 3 years for the assessment and for the cleanup grant. Now, in regards to, making your actual loan terms, EPA don't set loan terms, nor do we determine interest rates. So that's pretty much is negotiated between the grantee and the loan recipient.
Okay, in the final, this one just came in, says slide 92 was 10% for health. See page 35 of application guidelines. I think that's just something to help out there. So the health monitoring, 10% of the grant can be used for health monitoring activities, and there are a variety of activities associated with that. One of the things that we want to caution, though, is that you not necessarily duplicate activities that a county health department may be doing in that community. We have, I guess, between 2 and 4 minutes here left on the call, depending on the two clocks I'm looking at. If we can take some verbal questions right now.
Let me just clarify, too. In regards to the 10% for monitoring of health issues of population exposed to contaminants, this is actually for the assessment grant. The 10% of the funds can be used for the cleanup grant and as well as for the revolving loan fund grant. This is not just unique to the revolving loan fund grant. This is unique to all three grants.
Exactly. And the other thing was
with health monitoring is that, as Mike said, we ask that you not duplicate what the health department is doing, but it's an excellent idea to coordinate with the health department to have them involved with whatever kind of health issues you presume are ongoing at your site. If not the health department, make sure that you have someone in your local government health agency involved with what you're doing if you're planning on using the 10% for health monitoring. It's a good idea. And the health departments quite often say, we would love to do it, but no one has asked us.
Okay. And I realize there's two or three questions that we didn't completely answer, and we'll get those in writing as we will with all the rest of them that were asked. Hopefully have that up in 24 to 48 hours here. But, again, are there any other questions before we run out of time here? I'm going to ask verbally. Okay, one last one came in here. Our COG, Council of Government, has finished a $145,000 rail transportation study, and some recommended passenger station sites were next to or in brownfield sites. Can we apply for funds to develop these sites, i.e. planning to provide to developers? Can we use the $145,000 as matching funds?
I didn't get the question.
$145,000 would be, if it's already spent, if it's in the process of being spent, we could look into that. With 1 minute left, Mike's going to, and we'll post the answer to that. Mike's going to have some concluding remarks.
Okay. All right. We appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about this today, and again, very good questions that all of you asked, and hopefully we've been able to help you out and provide you with some good answers, and where we haven't given you answers, we expect to fill those in very shortly. Again, just keep in mind the key date is December 8th for having your grant applications in. Look at slide number 104 for phone numbers, for contact information for all the people that talked on this call. And if you have any other questions or need any other contact, feel free to contact me via email. It would be the best way. That's norman.michael@epa.gov. And I think with that, we'll conclude for the day. Thank you.